It's time to get behind the lyrics, the music, and the artist. You're listening to the Music's Journey podcast, brought to you by NowAndThenMagazine.com, your music and entertainment online magazine. I'm John Marshall. With your special guest, here's your host, Kim Sear.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Music's Journey podcast. I'm your host, Kim Sear, with my very special guest, Pat Quarterback, the lead singer for the Juno-nominated pop band Stereos. They have a brand new single out today called Look Good. We are so excited to dive right into the lyrics and everything about Stereos today. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How about you?
I'm terrific. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, so excited to have you back. It has been a while since I've spoken to you last. And I know that when I spoke to you before, you guys were just at the top, right at the top of your game. So I'd like to take it right back because you guys have been away for a little while. And the bands are so excited, especially all the fans, all of us are, you know, when it comes to your new music from last year and moving into this year with this brand new single. So let's strip it right back. You've been in the business now for like 12 years, but you guys really worked hard when it come to doing the grind, when it come to doing all the small venues and things like that when I had spoken to you before. And then you guys hit really big. And we're going to talk about Disband and all that stuff. But take us right back to what your musical influences are and where you guys were at when you first started out.
Yeah, so you kind of nailed it. We were like, we met each other through just the punk rock scene in Edmonton. Now that, like, we say the punk rock scene, but that meant that there were bands that were hardcore bands, emo bands, acoustic bands, indie bands, and they're all just friends with one another and just playing shows together. They would tour together, and it was just everyone was very collaborative. And so that's the scene we kind of like met through and grew up in. And it was just about, honestly, you had made it if you made it out of Edmonton and were on tour in a van. And so that's all our goal ever was when we started. And so, very typical of a lot of other bands, it was just like starting to rehearse in the basement, and we really sucked, and we just kept going, and it was equal parts daydreaming as much as it was songwriting. And I think that really lent itself towards like having this big picture view of where we could take things. And I think over time we just sucked a little bit less and less. And I think we really took a spin when we were exploring the pop sound and really combined like a lot of 50s and 60s like soul and Motown melodies with a pop punk, pop rock sound, which really led into the sound of our first album.
I remember when I spoke to you first, you were so excited because we were in the middle of a really rainy day in a muddy field and AFI was on. And you were so excited because I know that they were such a huge influence for you. You wanted to do anything, everything AFI at that time.
Yes. It's wild you say that. I literally, over the last 48 hours, have gone down an AFI rabbit hole again. And just watching old interviews. This morning I was watching a show from like 2000 and I got chills because it was the same tour that I had first seen them on. I remember the day, it was June 28th, 2000, where I had already loved AFI, but I'd never seen them live, and I didn't know what to expect. And the internet was so, like, different than it was now, so I honestly didn't even know what they really looked like. And they came out, like, you know, anyone who doesn't know at the time, just full black makeup, and I was just blown away. And the next day, I literally quit skateboarding the next day. I was done with sports. It was, I'm going to be in a band. I didn't know if I could sing. I didn't know if I could do anything, but that was it. I'm going to be in a band, and I was... It shifted everything.
Well, because you were a real melody guy at the time. And that's what you would talk to me about, because you like to do melodies over top of the lyrics of other bands, especially AFI.
Yes. Wow. I'm very impressed you remember this, because that is something I talk about nowadays. How did you know you could write songs? It's like I would hum my own melodies to other songs that existed, and people didn't know what I was doing. That's how I just got my own song ideas. So, yeah, very. And they were... That's the thing. They were very heavy, but very melodic. And that was something that I didn't even know. I wasn't like, I need a melodic band. I was 14. Mm-hmm. But I know now that's what it was, for sure.
I remember you being so hungry, just so excited. But you guys spent a lot of time, like, I don't think a lot, maybe people don't know about Hope Unknown, but I do. So,
No. Wow, you do. Okay.
Yeah. So let's go back to that. So that was the first band that you started
first
in, right?
Ever band.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was a kind of like a skate punk, more along the lines of like a NoFX or Strung Out band. But they weren't really AFI fans. They thought they were okay. And then, yeah, I suggested the name Hope Unknown. They all loved it. But they really made fun of me for how obsessed I was with AFI. And they didn't find out till way later that that was an AFI lyric. And they were so mad at me that they were now in a band named after an AFI lyric.
I remember this so well.
Oh, it's hilarious. We still joke about that. That's the beauty of Facebook nowadays. I talk to some of those guys now, and they've been huge supporters of where I've gone to. But
well, they love you guys, and they love, you know, what's gone on, you know, for you, because they were older than you at the time when you started out. And I remember how excited you were. And I remember sitting there in backstage, and everybody else was going on, and you, just like Billy Talent, everybody that was going up, you were sitting there so excited. It was just like seeing that drive in you, and knowing that, I don't even think you were aware of how good you were vocally at that point.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that. I think that, like, that is something that I've always really, it's funny, it's gone through cycles where I had almost this inferiority complex about my vocals, especially once we saw success, which is odd, mm-hmm. because that's when you start hearing the comments about autotune, this and that. And I'm sitting here being like, no, the autotune's an effect. I don't, like, quote unquote, need it. It's just like this. And then you start to, like, second guess it. And, like, mm-hmm. it's very weird to, like, come back from it now, especially where I think my vocals are quite a bit different even than they were 10 years ago. But mm-hmm. to hear that, it does mean a lot. That I've always been proud of that being my craft.
Well, you had no fear. You had no fear then, because you had nothing to lose. But when you guys, like, so many fans don't realize how hard you guys worked when it come to writing. Let's go back to Stand By Me first. So let's go back so fans understand that, and then take us into Mary Rose.
Sure. So Mary Rose is first. That was like the where I met Rob, and mm-hmm. it was very screamo, I guess, is the the genre we would go. And that was writing, I think, the way a lot of bands write, in a basement, and you just jam. Mm-hmm. And you just, like, go back and forth and, like, ideas. And I think that's all we really knew. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely my first band, like, Hope Unknown, like you mentioned. That's how we did it.
Yep.
What shifted with Stand By Me was when Dan came into our band. He was saying how, well, first of all, I'd written a joke song because I just got GarageBand on my laptop at that point, and he was like, this is how we're writing songs. We're not doing it in the basement anymore. You will write the songs, and then we'll change them at the end, just put little tweaks and put them through the band filter, but this is how we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And he turned me on to just pop music and, like, the you know, the art of a chorus and, you know, the structure, the bridge, and, like, where what to do with your chord progressions. And that's when I really got into the 50s and 60s Motown and soul, because it was simple. And because I still don't play an instrument to this day, but I write all the songs.
I thought you did. I remember you saying that at the time, that you didn't play any instruments, but you were going to work on it.
Well, you haven't worked on many things in my life. Yeah, I kind of.
Slacker.
But I can plunk around on a piano, and that's how I figure out my chord progressions. And then I just sing over top of those. So very, very rudimentary. Like, and that was because, like, those songs are so classic, but they're also very simple. But there's, mm-hmm. it's not easy, because I've always said, like, if it was easy to write a hit, then everyone would do it. So to kind of really, like, dig into what made those songs great, and why are they still timeless today? Why are they, like, why does, you know, you hear I Want You Back by the Jackson 5, and there's zero people who's like, this is not a good song. I mean, maybe there are, but they're wrong. And so there's you know, there's something there in those songs that mm-hmm. really, like, shifted the way I wrote songs around just hooks and melodies. And that's when we found our sound. Like, that's how Summer Girl came about. I wrote that long before Disband was ever a reality, the reality show. It was, you know, Summer Girl was written on a day off from working retail in my dad's basement, and I'm proud of that.
And you guys wrote it twice. Like, you didn't write that once. You wrote it twice and released two different versions of that.
Summer Girl was written once, but, I mean, it's a funny, like, you know, inside baseball thing. It was written once, and we actually released the demo 2 years ago for a 10-year reunion to see what mm-hmm. it sounded like, and it was so similar that it kept triggering, I don't even know the technology, like, behind Shazam, where you can't post other people's music, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so because we don't own the master, I was trying to release my own demo, and it would get shut down.
Every single time.
So every time. And so the only thing I would say, though, is that once we got out to Toronto and recorded with our producer, Gavin Brown, that's when we dove into the lyrics. That's when we really changed around some key things, such as, like, even just saying, I wanna, before mm-hmm. the chorus.
Mm-hmm.
that was never there. And he was like, you know, that's when production and a really good producer can kind of take the song to the next level.
Yeah, definitely. And I know that, you know, for you guys, writing was so important to you. The music was so important to you. And I know that that's such a huge topic today when it comes to bands that are starting out and, you know, bands that are trying to write the hits when it comes to what suits radio today. What's the big difference? Because you guys started out TV. TV was how you guys hit with Disband. Yeah. And people don't maybe understand that was just, that wasn't that long ago. And how much music has changed today?
Oh, it's so interesting. So our manager now is 26, I think. And it is such a massive blessing to really understand the Spotify streaming playlist world right now, because it's so different. Like we basically went on hiatus after our second album, which was on CD. So that's how long we'd kind of been out of the reality. Now I will say this, I actually don't believe that writing a good song has changed, and maybe, or that much at least. Of course there's new influences, and we actually have put some newer sounds into our music, but I think in terms of like a hook driven chorus that sticks in your head, for me, I'm lucky because I honestly believe that because I don't play an instrument, it served me so well, because the only thing that matters is the hook. And it's not about, well, I want to go minor with a chord here, because I don't even know how to do that. So the song is written just bare bones, and then when we want to add those flavors at the end, you know, then we can bring it to life. But to answer your question more specifically, I think the music industry has changed like drastically in the streaming world. Obviously COVID brings with it, you know, significant challenges, but in terms of writing the songs, I honestly think that's the kind of thing where I believe that what makes a good pop song is still kind of the same.
Well, because you can tell, like with the song that you released last year and then the brand new one that you've got coming out this year, you know it's you. You know it's you guys, because you guys have a signature sound, but at the same time, there's new music here. Like it's just such a cool blend that you guys have done.
Well, thank you for saying so. And I think that's one of the things that I've always loved about Stereos, is that it almost defies genre or categorization. Like at the end of the day, it's just pop, which I think is the easiest way to put it. Because we have some country elements on the new album. We have some EDM elements. We have, you know, funk on the, like, I think Look Good is like a cool, funky, summery sounding song, but it's, at the end of the day, it is Stereos. And that's what I've always loved. I just did an interview where I really liken it to movies. Like, I would lose my mind if I could only watch a horror movie or only watch action or only watch comedy. I like all of them. And it's insane to me that I like wouldn't write in all these genres that I love. Like, why would I limit myself to that? To me, it seems really stifling. So I've loved that Stereos gives me that outlet.
Yeah, because I know that that was something that I remember you saying way back when, was when you first started out, you didn't have an outlet when it come to instruments and that kind of thing. It was the lyrics and the melodies is what you lived for.
Big time. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's very true still, I would say.
When people talk about Disband, let's bring that back for the fans, because, you know, for you guys, that was such a huge event for you. And yet, I remember when you guys got introduced to Gene Simmons and all of that, I was there that day. And that got put into the story, but it wasn't really the story. And, you know, so talk to everybody about Disband and the role that that played in your careers and the success.
Well, it was monumental, and it's something that is, like, without a doubt, I would say the single most, you know, like, catapulting thing for our career was that reality show. Now, I will say this, is there's a reason why people think Disband and they think Stereos first, and I hope that doesn't come across sounding arrogant, because, of course, there were other great bands that were on it, including These Kids Wear Crowns, who did really well because of it, too. But
yeah, but you guys were kind of the face of Disband at the time.
Yeah, and we were actually the second or third band to film that show, which is interesting because people don't really realize that, because we were released last. We were the finale. But the reason why is because we lived in a band house together. We rehearsed 6 nights a week. We got into the point where, like, we were deciding with each other what each other could wear, what we would look like. And then the songs, obviously, it was very strict about, like, having this pop sound. So by the time we got on the show, people think like people have asked us, like, were you guys put together? Like, obviously they didn't watch the show then, but like, there's an image that comes with being on a reality show that you think a boy band. Well,
yeah.
Before that boy band, we had been a band for 4 years, dialing in every single thing so that when these major labels came to the table, they said, well, we don't need to get them a stylist because they look the way that all our, their fans will want them to look. We don't need to get them songwriters because they have this song that everyone was like pushing each other aside, trying to get their hands on.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't need to tell them to write the songs, and they're basically every job we'd have to do is done, and they're going to be on this reality show. So we were very, very calculated in terms of putting together what we felt was the perfect package, that it was kind of a no-brainer. And so once we got on that stage, I remember getting a phone call from Greg Norrie, who was the on the show, about the possibility of the show. Mm-hmm. And I remember hanging up and saying to the guys, we're going to go on the show. And because we're going to go on the show, Much Music is going to want to make us their band. And I just knew it. I just knew it after that first phone call. We're lucky it played out that way.
Boy, you know what? And Canadians couldn't be more proud, because you guys have stood the test of time. And to hear your new music today, you know, with Sunset Gold, and then your new release that's out today, look good. Incredible. You guys are just right on the pulse of music today, just like you were back then.
Well, I really appreciate you saying so. And I'll even give a shout out to, there's an Edmonton artist named Dan Davidson. He's a country artist, but he is such a wildly talented songwriter. And so Look Good and there's another song on our album called Glory Days are both co-writes with him. And I'll say, like, putting my, I think I wrote, I want to say 7 of the 10 songs on the album by myself. But I wrote 6 of those since October when I started writing with Dan. And I think I really learned a lot from him to then take my own, you know, brain into like finishing up my own songs. But I have to give him a shout out, because that is one thing on this album that I'm really, I loved working with, just a different brain and someone who I think is under, he's unsung, and I think he's going to blow up as a songwriter. You know, he's already doing very well for himself, but I got to give him a shout out for sure.
Well, he is a very, very talented artist himself. And, you know, it's just amazing how many people he's been writing with, especially over the pandemic. And
oh my goodness,
before, like, he is on fire. He is on fire. He's such a good talent, a great talent.
I'm glad you agree.
And I know that, you know, when we talk back to the success of what TV was at the time, and 10 years ago isn't that long ago. But when we think about how huge people watching videos were at the time, and where people tuned in, you know, to the TV for music in comparison to the live streaming platforms today, what do you see as the biggest shift when it comes to promoting your music?
Oh, goodness, it's a good question. And like, again, I'm so thankful that I don't have to be in charge of promoting it, because I would be wildly underqualified. But I do think there's something that you have to overcome the lack of a physical sale and attachment to music. And so I remember what it was like to lie to my parents, skip school to get a CD the day it came out, and literally learn every lyric by the end of that first day of having the album, what it smelled like, sitting in my room with the lights off and headphones in, and like getting into music that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's completely different. It's sort of a very short attention span. So I think you put a song out, it's going to get some eyeballs, but then like, I don't know how long that lasts anymore, because
the playlist,
I don't know, like, if people listen to, exactly, and then play. Like, I remember we got some playlists with Sunset Gold, and our manager told us, hey, we got on this playlist. And at the time, I was like, I did not get it. I was like, well, I make playlists. Like, what? Who cares? You know what I mean? But it's like, no, you don't understand. Like, these are the playlists that, like, really go a long way in promoting the music. So I just didn't get it. I'm sort of learning it. But to be completely honest with you, like, just I'm thankful every day that we have people like Andrew, our manager, and a good team around us who can kind of do that for us. Because you're totally right. Like, the landscape has changed. I think the only real thing that's still the constant is that you absolutely can't escape the fact that the most important thing is the live show. And so, you know, just praying that this can
back
time up
back.
For us to come back and do that, you know, by this time next year.
I hope so, because I think we all are missing it so much. Music has such a way of healing us, whether it's, you know, through good times or bad times, but it's all how we relate to today in our times. And, you know, when you guys were releasing the music, you know, it's different when you're going in and you're buying the CDs. People are still doing that. And I think people are going back to a lot of that, you know, starting to pick up the CDs once again. It's, you know, slowly coming back around to that and having physical music sitting in front of you where you can touch it, feel it, and, you know, put it in and just play it. Playlists are one thing, you know, when it comes to fans rating. And I think that's the only difference really is, you know, people going out and buying the CD, you guys went by how many record sales you have. Today it's by ratings. You know, yeah. When it comes to, you know, how many, like, are you going to rate it between 1 and 5? Is it a 4-star, 5-star? And that's how you guys get your awards on Spotify and all the rest of the live streaming platforms, right?
100%. And you're right. Like, I even now, like, just, you know, you give a song a heart or whatever, and then it's there. Like, it's obviously it's a really cool way of, you know, sort of gaining the attention of today's audience. And mm-hmm. so I feel like every generation of music listener looks at the current, you know, landscape and thinks that it was better in their time. So I don't want to make myself sound too much like I'm yelling at the clouds, but I recognize that I miss some of how I used to enjoy music. But mm-hmm. of course, nowadays, the reality is the reality, and you can either, you know, play ball or not. And so,
yeah. And the other thing too, with the streaming platforms today, is you guys are reaching a much wider audience than you would have when it comes to people discovering your music. Like, this is an international show, and, you know, so many people from the UK and Australia and, you know, Japan and China, all the different locations around the world that listen to this podcast are really discovering a lot of bands that they may not have ever known before coming out of Canada. I'm so excited for you guys with this album and everything that you guys are releasing for new music.
Well, thanks so much. I am too. I think that, like, it's interesting because it's very much a pop stereos album, but it also was born from a really, really tough year for all of us, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. And, like, so it's, you know, yeah, it's a very, I would say, shiny pop sound, especially like on some of the songs, but it's much more meaningful to us than I think it's ever been, just based on what went into creating this album mm-hmm. and, you know, personal circumstances for all four of us.
Well, I think too, like, when you guys are all together, and it's the same for any band, everybody's taking a look at what, you know, you're doing it for a certain period of time, you guys have great success, but then everybody kind of wants their personal life too. And it's a hard balance when it comes to that kind of success, the way you guys hit so fast, and it was just like overnight, like, you guys were at the top of the charts. The nominations, like Juno nominations, the multi-platinum awards, it's just crazy when you look back at how successful you guys were and how quickly it was. When you're looking back at that now, what's the biggest lesson the band has learned together?
Oh my goodness, it's a good question. I think the biggest lesson we've really learned was you absolutely need to do this with the understanding that this is for you mm-hmm. and that if the external sort of gratification, whether it be fans or some of the awards you mentioned, come, then that's great. But we saw every level of that where I think our, like, a lot of the first album was really on our own terms mm-hmm. and then a lot of the second was not. And then when the second album didn't really perform, it's really easy to second guess, well, why did we do that? And it's not, and I'm not pointing the finger saying, well, it's because other people took over. Mm-hmm. I am saying, no, I can live with things if I'm the one steering the ship right. creatively, depending if it does well or does not do well. Mm-hmm. I'm never again will be able to live with being told things that didn't fit well with me and then having them not pan out, because it's just not worth it at the end of the day. And again, like, this is an industry that has no rules. It doesn't follow the, like, the rules of your everyday workplace. It's not fair. You know, it's not, there's no accountability. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to get into this, I think, for yourself and for nothing else, because if you're doing it to get famous or to make money, it's, oh my goodness, it's next to them. Or, yeah. And I mean, good luck.
Yeah. Very, very short-lived, because, you know, when it comes to writing music for yourself, that's the longevity. And, you know, when it comes to the bands that have been so successful generation after generation, you know, that long-standing fan affair, you know, is because you guys are true to yourselves. And that's the one thing you guys have been known for. You know, when it comes to your interviews, when it comes to fans getting to take a look at the individual band members, you know, behind the scenes, it's always been, you know, such an inspiration to see how much music meant to each and every one of you and the hard grind you guys have put through. You guys, you know, people might see, okay, they hit it really big, you know, all of a sudden overnight, may not have heard of you before, but I remember, you know, going to all the different clubs and seeing you guys perform, and you guys were so good. And it's just, you know, it was a matter of getting you out in the right audience. And Canadian Music Week was one way to do that. And I remember, you know, when you guys first appeared there, it's just, it goes way back for me. And I just, you know, I really appreciate the grind that you guys have done and the hard work and all the writing that you guys sit back and do, because it's so important, your lyrics and, you know, the messages that you guys have always delivered. And this new music shows that.
Well, I can't say enough how much that means to me. And, you know, what really kickstarted this whole new iteration of the band was just the reunion shows. And we thought that's all it would be. It was just a reunion, 10 years, like, let's celebrate, let's go out on our own terms, is what we said. Like, we're going to go out this way, though. And then, you know, I think part of it's ego and loving the crowd, but a lot of it was meeting the people who said very similar things to what you just said, where, you know, I didn't have any friends in junior high, but I came to your shows and I met friends that are now coming to my baby shower. Like, you know, our band is the reason they have these now, like, 10-year strong relationships. Or, you know, seeing someone who I remember as, literally, I remember what they looked like when they were 13 and they're in med school now. And just, like, they saw it as such a, I don't think we realized how much we meant to people. I really don't think we did. And so when we were shown that, it was sort of a no-brainer to me that I'm not done. I can't help it. I'm just not done.
We're so happy you're not done. We are so happy you're not done.
It means a lot. Thank you.
Now, talk about the choosing of Sunset Gold and the meaning behind that one.
So that song, I think, lyrically comes from a place which sounds sort of like, you know, a lost love, the one that's got away, but I believe that we will reconcile is essentially the overarching theme. And to me, I was 100% writing about Stereos. It was
the band.
Me,
yeah,
it was me saying, and it was after the shows. So we'd already kind of had some, we'd gotten back together, we had rehearsed, and it just felt like played in front of people, and it felt like so good. And so to me, it really sort of encompasses how I feel about this band and its place in my life, what it's meant to me, and where I see it going.
Which is really, really cool. So we're going to come back and talk about the lyrics a little bit more, but let's play Sunset Gold with my very special guest, Juno nominated and multi-platinum award winner Pat Quarterback from Stereos, here on Music's Journey.
We used to drive right to the edge, but then we lost it all somewhere. Brightest sunset never ends, so I'll find you once again. We're the night, baby. We're the night. Light in my mind, baby. Light in my mind. You were the song, baby. You were my sunset gold.
Great song, Sunset Gold from Stereos. Now let's get back to the Music's Journey podcast with her special guest. Here is Kim Sear. But before we do that, I have to say, Pat, the Oilers suck.
Okay.
You know what? You're lucky that I actually like being like made fun of. I don't know. It's a weird defect I have where I like it when people chirp me, because this is a very tough day for me waking up today.
I'm so sorry.
It's funny because after game 3's collapse, I said, I'm not even watching game 4. I can't put myself through it. Do you think that happened? No, I was up until I think midnight watching the double overtime, and I just, whatever, man.
All right, so let's get back to Sunset Gold, because it was such a great song. Talk about, you know, making that decision for that particular song, you know, coming back into it after you guys had been back out there doing some performances and, you know, understanding that, you know what, hey, we're going to do this and this is the one we're going to use.
Well, to be completely honest with you, this is kind of funny because I love that song, and we're actually going to include it on the album because I don't know if it got enough of a spotlight just being kind of a single, and we released it, I want to say, like 2 weeks before the pandemic really hit. Mm-hmm. So it didn't have the opportunity, I think, to get sort of a lot of attention. But the reason we released that song is because it's the only one we had. It was the first and only song I wrote for this new version of Stereos. By the time we went to record it, there was kind of another one. But no, it was really just out of, this is what we had to work with, mm-hmm. and it was sounding the way we wanted it to. Now, you know, obviously take the last year very seriously, and it's not anything to, I guess what I'm getting at is, though, the pause that was sort of, you know, placed on us due to COVID was, I think, really good, because I think that I could have really gone just heavy in that sort of, like, 'cause Sunset Gold has that sort of tropical house EDM vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And I think I was really like focused on making that like our sound. And I do think it was good for me, just as a songwriter, to have to take a step back and be like, well, explore other things. And then, you know, getting to work with Dan Davidson and him being like, well, like, don't be shy of the whole pop sound that Stereos really brings to the table. And so anyways, I just think it was a more well-rounded record after Sunset Gold. But I do think it fills a really cool spot on the album.
Oh, for sure. Now, when we're talking about the pandemic, you know, because you guys had the hiatus, you know, for 8 years, and then you're coming back with Sunset Gold, and then, you know, you guys are going through the pandemic, you know, there's just such a unique perspective when it comes to how much things even changed even further for you guys, because you're away for certain like the time, and then coming back through such difficult times, it would mean something different to each of you, right?
Big time. And that's why I keep saying, like, this album means so much to each individual member, and for a different reason. You know, our guitar player Rob has made huge strides in his own life with, you know, he's gone sober, and that was like a huge thing for him. And so this album was happening at the same time, and it was really such a great way for him to express energy in like different ways. And for me, like, Look Good, the next single, like, I think at first listen sounds very much like a just a happy kind of pop song, like I Look Good, but the lyrics specifically deal with
self-love,
and especially in the face of maybe the world making you feel like you shouldn't feel that way. And that was intentional, because when I wrote that with Dan Davidson, it was a week out of a relationship ending that I did not see coming, and it was sort of like, so it, like, we in fact, the idea started out as, damn, you look good, a very, like, you know, sort of a looking at someone else, and we shifted the lyrics to be like, no, like, make it about yourself and feeling good in the face of sort of an adversarial situation. And so, yeah, tons
very
and tons
brilliant.
Of just, like,
yeah.
No, yeah, and I think that it means so much to me, but I hope that, again, after the year that everyone has had, that it speaks to them, that this is about, like, you know, being happy with yourself first and foremost, because it's a lesson I had to learn. And so I'm really glad I was able to put that into what I think is a very, you know, uplifting sounding song.
Well, 100%, because it's an upbeat, you know, summer anthem song that everybody's going to get behind, you know, for sure. And, you know, I love it. Absolutely love this song. And I know that, you know, for different people, like you're saying, you know, what Rob went through and so many other people, you know, are going through, because when you've got life, you know, as busy as it is, And, you know, when you guys especially, you know, start, you know, getting back into the music writing, you guys are, you know, trying to promote with radio, doing all the interviews and stuff, it gets really swamped. And it's really hard to be able to see the bigger picture again, because you guys are thrown into the thick of it. And, you know, to be able to strip it back like everybody else has, like removing the noise of life, you know, whether it's jobs that people have lost or family members or just COVID period, you know, when it comes to how busy life can take away, you know, that thought process of having to deal with something that is there. It's always been there. But you know what? Life keeps us busy enough that we just don't have to deal with it. And now, you know, so many people have had to deal with a lot of their own demons. And this is why this song sticks out and, you know, is going to do so well.
Well, I appreciate it. It's so good to hear, because, again, I can put that into the lyrics and the songwriting, but it's kind of not up to me whether or not people also receive it that way. And so to hear your take on it, that's great. And I hope that, like, you know, it doesn't need to be just about if someone's relationship ends, if it means something to anyone, because I know that a song can change my mood for the day. It can change, you know, it can help with a workout. It can help with a million things. And if I can write a song that also does that for whatever reason for someone, it's still surreal to me to think that that impact could happen. I love that.
Well, you have it, and so did Dan, and we're so grateful for the song. So let's play Look Good, my brand new single with Juno-nominated pop band Stereos, right here on Music's Journey.
Put me on your shelf, made it hurt like hell, and I'm gonna wish you well. No, I don't think about you. But I know you think about me, 'cause
the latest for Stereos, Look Good. I'm John Marshall. Now let's get back to the Music's Journey podcast with our special guest. Here is Kim Sear.
When it comes to the rest of the band, you know, when it comes to looking at this new music and this new journey for you guys, what's the outlook for the band today?
I think we have come to this very weird place in our lives where we are the closest we've ever been. I think a lot of that is because of the fact that, you know, if you give any one of us truth serum, we've missed it. And, you know, there's obviously there's a spotlight that you kind of miss in your life. I'm not going to lie. But also I think that having a creative outlet is essential for anyone who does this, whether it be for a living or even recreational. You need that in your life. And so for us, we were so galvanized by the fact that we had to make this album in January in complete lockdown. So, you know, masks, distance. And then the other side was that I was living in the city I don't live in with zero things to do outside of the studio. And so it was very isolating. And but at the same time, it makes this album so much more special to me because I associate it with just that, like, really working hard at something I believed so much in. And we were there every day. We were all going through the same thing where it's like, this is all we kind of have right now. And it, well, obviously I keep having to qualify it by saying I would way prefer that COVID were not a thing, but I do think that it's made us, you know, at this point in our lives, just really appreciate everything that we had so much more. I make the joke that, like, this is the first time in my life where I hated weekends because we weren't in the studio and I had nothing to do. And so I was just, like, waiting for Monday morning at 9 a.m., which I've never done with any other job in my life. I can say that safely.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when it comes to stripping back, you know, life and what we want to do and what we can do, you know, I think this is the first time this generation, you know, has ever felt that, where I know that our grandparents and parents have felt it. And life has the way of leveling us out, you know, at some point in time. And it's been a horrible way to do it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, change can be good too. And learning from that and being able to apply, you know, those positive messages. And that's what you guys have done, you know, with this new music. And look what it's meant to you guys. Right? You know, individually, those messages are right there in the lyrics, and that's going to move an awful lot of people at the right time.
I love that you say that again. I really, really hope so. I think that, I mean, at the end of the day, what else is music or art in general about? I hope that it is something that on the other end of a very trying period of time for everyone, that this be something that shifts, you know, a collective mindset. If it has that ability, that would be great.
Well, because music is a way of identifying ourselves too, you know, to what we like. And there's so much out there right now, you know, when it comes to Canadian content, which is amazing, by the way. You know, Canadian music is just outstanding today. And,
yep,
you know,
I agree.
All the bands, every genre, you know, are really showing up for Canada, and we are on the world stage and just with incredible music out there. And you guys are a big part of that.
I completely agree. I think that, like, currently it was, I feel like we can kind of stop, like, there's always sort of this, like, need to be like, oh, they're Canadian. Well, I hope we've overcome that. Like, if you look at the biggest pop artists nowadays, with The Weeknd or Justin Bieber or Drake with hip hop, or, like, you know, Carly Rae Jepsen had her time and things like that. Like, I think we've done enough on the international stage to sort of prove that, you know, this isn't an anomaly. And then when we were sort of in our heyday, this much music sort of pop sound, whether it be These Kids Wear Crowns or Down With Webster, you know, Carly Rae was part of that as well. There were so many of us, and it was, it felt like a really great time for Canadian pop music. And I got to be honest, my ear is not even close to the ground as it used to be, but I really hope that that sees a resurgence once things open up and, again, shows can happen.
I hope so, because I know some of those bands are planning on getting together again. I think it's towards September, from what I understand. So
I love that.
Yeah, so I'm hoping, you know, that, because it's such a huge movement, you know, in music, you know, exactly where you guys are now and where some of the bands you just mentioned, you know, Down With Webster, all of those guys, you know, it's just like such a huge impact, you know, when it comes to music, period. You know, it doesn't matter where you are, where you're located in the world, it's just massive. And you guys have done such a great job. Is there a music video coming up?
Yes, there is. So, yeah, you know, we're dealing with the realities. We're literally waiting by the day to hear something that will give us a target date in which the appropriate gathering size would be allowed. But, yeah, we have a team ready to go. So, yes, there will be, but it's you know, kind of, I think, I don't know enough about where Ontario's at, which is where we'd have to do it. Mm-hmm. But I think mid-June is the target to get out and do a video.
Oh, awesome. Can't wait to see that because you guys are so good when it comes to being able to bring that music live. And I think that's just everything we're missing right now. How hard has it been for you guys not to perform, knowing that you guys just came back with a reunion, then your release last year, right into the pandemic?
Honestly, we're so lucky because it honestly didn't really have a huge detrimental impact on our band just because we really, what we needed to do over the last year was write. Mm-hmm. And I wrote probably 25 songs and then record, and we recorded 12, and I think 10 will be on the album.
Awesome.
So that's what we honestly didn't really miss a step. I know that we were targeting the fall to tour. So that's mm-hmm. one way it'll impact us, 'cause I think it'll be more like early next year.
Right.
But that's the one small way we've actually been, you know, I really feel for artists, especially those in maybe less like genres that really depend on like the live show gathering, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because I know it's had such a huge impact. But, you know, fortunately for us, it hasn't been a real deal breaker on our end.
Yeah, because you guys have been in the studio getting prepared for this mm-hmm. release. Is there some live shows that are coming up that you guys have got a live streaming, or is there something coming up that the fans can watch?
There definitely are some possibilities. Some this summer, but again, that's huge, like massively contingent upon them being permissible. I am not opposed to the live stream idea, but again, I think it just goes back to the punk rock band in a van mentality, where if there's not a crowd there, it's really not appealing to me. Mm-hmm. If we have to, and that's kind of, you know what I mean? Like if we were to go through something like we went through last year, where it's just, that's the only option, of course I would do it. Mm-hmm. But I'm really hoping to hold off until we can do this the way it should look.
I can't wait just to see you guys performing again. You know, that's just something that we're all going to be looking forward to, and I'm really hoping it's going to come soon. I am Kim Sear, your host for Music's Journey, and here I am chatting with Pat Kordybak. So I'm so excited for this brand new single. Again, for your fans out there, it's released today. It's called Look Good, and it is out on all platforms for streaming. So if you guys add it to your playlist, it goes a long way when it comes to how well the band does. So again, this is Look Good, and this is Stereos. So excited about this brand new single. So share it, download it, request it at your local radio stations. So we're really looking forward to how well this one does. It's just such a great up-tune beat right now that we all need a summer anthem, and it's just such an amazing pleasure to be able to hear this one today.
Thank you so much for saying so.
Now, are you okay to do a couple burning questions?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. All righty. You ready for this one?
Good luck.
All right. What is your favorite gig so far to date?
Oh, wow. Good one. I'm going to say opening for Katy Perry.
Ooh.
And that was at what? Is it Budweiser Stage now mm-hmm. in Toronto? Or yeah, okay. So, and that was to me you hear hockey players talk about their welcome to the NHL moment where they realize, and that to me was like, we are doing something beyond my wildest dreams, because not only were we playing with Katy Perry, who was a huge artist, mm-hmm. but we were going out to our van to like just after our set, and one kid turned into 10, turned into 100,
awesome.
To the point where they had to set up security by us for all these kids who wanted photos and autographs. And of course we were taking all of them. We've always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then it extended into her sets. And
oh,
that's where I'm like,
wow.
You came to see Katy Perry, but you are missing her show currently to wait in line to get a 2-second photo. And it was just like, that was a moment that I will remember for the rest of my life. And you know what? There's so many, like, we talked about the Oilers and we got to sing the anthem there and be on the ice like before a game. Like, there's so many monumental things and crazy shows we've played, but that one will always stick out as a moment where it's just like, I don't even understand what's happening right now.
Well, you know what? Those are all those diehard fans that I remember when I was doing Edgefest. And they'd be out there at 7 a.m. in the morning. It didn't matter how bad the weather was, and they did not move. And I remember Miles getting up on the stage, all of you guys, you know, and it was just pouring rain. And they didn't budge, and absolutely there for you guys. And you know what? It's just awesome to see that that's still, you know, the kind of reception you guys are getting.
We had this terrible habit. I love our Colin Lewis, who was our booking agent at the time, to death, but we'd always tour Canada in the winter, which is like, you know, can we please shift it 6 months on either side?
But, you guys played more in the rain than anybody I know.
Oh my goodness. Rain, and like rain's a dream compared to like Sault Ste. Marie, mm-hmm. like, you know, in the middle of January. But I will say this, like to your point, the amount of times we'd have kids waiting outside like the hotels and stuff like that in the middle of like the most frozen day, like waiting with their moms in the car and then getting out and timidly asking for an autograph. Like, again, I've said that it's one thing we've always prided ourselves on because we grew up as fans. It's like, we've definitely never said no to an autograph or a photo or anything like that, especially if they're going to, you know, wait in the cold for us. It's wild.
That's awesome. That's awesome that you guys are still doing that. That's amazing. Favorite songwriter of all time and why?
I'm going to say The Dream, just because The Dream influenced all of my songwriting and like really honed in on my melody, especially in the R&B and pop world. I think not a lot of people, especially now, he's not maybe as current, but like the songs he was responsible for were exactly what shaped our entire first album. Kind of since then, it hasn't changed.
Okay. All right. So tell us something that you did that you were rebellious as a child.
Oh my goodness. I don't even know.
It's gotta be a good one.
I
come on.
Begin. Like, my poor parents, I was like, it's funny because I'm very much a product of my parents, which is like, I don't like being told just no or yes. I need to know why I'm being told yes or no, but they also like, wanted critical thinkers. I'm trying to think about like what would be the most rebellious thing. I mean, I think, you know, I would skip school all the time to go buy music, which they hated. But I, you know what? I was like such a good kid. I really was. I talked too much and I made too many jokes, but I wasn't like ever like that bad. I'll say this. I probably went out with my friends drinking at like 15, but I mean, it's Alberta. I think everyone does that.
All right. So what is your favorite song of all time and why?
You know what? The amount of times I post to my like Instagram story, like, this is the best song I've ever written, like, I'm not taking questions. I've done it with like 20 songs though, so I probably lost a lot of credibility.
I do it all the time. Don't worry.
Yeah, well, I mean, in that moment, it is, right?
Yep, it's the best exactly. song I've ever heard.
Okay, this is going to be probably like a lame answer because most people would go like classic, like Bohemian Rhapsody, which is Bohemian Rhapsody is probably the correct answer, but my answer is going to be When You Were Young by The Killers, because they are one of my favorite bands of all time.
Mm-hmm.
However, I find that they're underrated, and a lot of people will say, well, how are they underrated? They're huge. I'm like, I know, but when you think of The Killers, you think of like Somebody Told Me,
just for
you
the
had
platform.
A boyfriend with a girlfriend. Yeah. But they released albums since then that are just so lyrically deep, and I think like the stories he's able to tell and the combination of like electronic and rock sounds.
Mm-hmm.
When You're Young to me is the perfect song.
Yeah, that's a very cool choice. Very cool. Okay, what is your favorite personality trait that you have?
Oh, it's got to be my sense of humor, because
here comes John on this one.
Like the Lord didn't give me height, but I've always had jokes, and so I've been able to kind of. Been able to kind of hang out in any situation, I think, because of that. So I'm very, very thankful for that.
Well, I think you and John have something in common there, because he's just like, he's the jokester all the time. But I always get such a hard time when it comes to doing the podcast, because he's always sneaking one in there, and they'll be sitting there going, oh, come on. It's like,
yeah.
Do you have a favorite joke?
A favorite joke? Oh, my goodness. Like, no, you know what? No, like I think my jokes are often, you know, super self-deprecating. So anytime I'm making fun of myself, that's my favorite joke.
Is there a favorite prank that's happened with the band that's been done to you?
Yeah. Like, so, okay. I'm going to make a very important distinction here. I've noticed this over the years. There are band guys, or obviously band girls, or musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very important distinction, because musicians do not really get along with band guys. And the reason I say that is because I think we're very much like, we all played sports as kids and stuff like that. And the reason we got into music was not because we're wildly like talented, but we just loved doing it and wanted to hang out with our friends.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, there's almost like pranks going on left and right every single day where, like we would, I mean, for me, I would get taped to chairs like in the middle of a live set. like, and I don't know, it'll take 2 seconds to look at a band photo, but I'm definitely the smallest one. So I didn't really have a chance in those situations. Like I remember specifically in Moncton getting taped to a chair and trying to like lean down and sing into the mic to my hand, which was also taped to my side. It was like almost impossible.
Oh God,
and,
that's funny.
The poor fans though, like that's at least a song or two where they're not going to hear the singer.
Who did that to you?
Oh, I would say like all, and oh. Everyone but the drummer, because he had to sit back there, but he would have if he could have, for
that's
sure.
That's funny. All right. If you could give advice to a younger Pat, what would you say and why?
I would say focus always on the songwriting side as opposed to anything else, just because it's the one skill where now that I'm in my mid-30s, I'm no longer thinking about being in my mid-30s. I'm thinking about being in my 60s, and I want that to look like I want it to look like. And I think that, I'm a little behind the eight ball time-wise, but I really wish I would have just kept songwriting even during the band's hiatus. And that's one thing I think time-wise I missed out on. And just like, I always knew this, but again, just always do it because you love it, not because of what sort of external gratification might come from that.
Well, I think when you're living in the moment and living life and writing about that stuff, you know, and the journey that you're taking, that's all a part of your music's journey, but it's also a part of your creativity too. And, you know, keeping tapped into that is the best thing in the world.
You're right. And I've said, I wish we didn't go on hiatus. I wish we would have taken maybe a year off and then go back together as opposed to just like breaking up. Mm-hmm. But even our guitarist Miles, he said to me, he's like, well, you don't know that. Like, you know, we've made no secret about it. Our deal at the time was really not, how do I put this, in our favor. Mm-hmm. And so what if we didn't take the time off? We were still in the middle of that deal where now we own our masters. And I didn't even know what that meant at the time, owning your masters. That's like, okay. That's the advice I will give to my former self and anyone listening who's starting out is own your masters. Mm-hmm. Big time.
Yeah. And you hear that too, you know, when it comes to people releasing or, you know, I have to be very delicate when I'm saying that too, you know, who's on, you know, the signing, you know, to releasing that record publicly, whether it's SoCan or whatever,
right.
You know, making sure, you know, your name's on that. So
well, we ran into that as well. And I think the difficult thing for us, though, was that it was the first time in my life where I didn't need a job and I was making more money than any of the jobs I had at the time. So I thought everything was good. And so I think we made enough to keep ourselves happy. But the amount, you know, we did lose out on I can't do anything about it, but it is a massive learning experience. You're right.
And it's such a difference, too. You know, when you guys were doing this, you know, what you were making then and what you would have made even if it was 10 years earlier, you know, than when you guys started out, you know, the amount of money that's different, you know, in the business today and especially today, you know, and what people are making today in comparison to what you guys were doing just 10 years ago. Right.
You're so right. I've said that all along, is that if we came out 10 years earlier, I would never have to work again. However, if we came out 10 years later, like now, it wouldn't have been even remotely the same as what it was. So we were able to be in kind of a sweet spot where we still had a lot of the tools that we could have turned into long-term success. Mm-hmm. And I think we can learn from the ways in which that didn't necessarily happen, but we were lucky to still be able to make something at the time.
Well, I think we are who we are, you know, today because of the lessons we've learned. And I think that when we step back and say, I wish I could have done this, you know, sometimes we may never have seen it. You wouldn't have seen it. And, you know, to what you have today because of what you guys have gone through. Yeah.
Yeah. We got so many opportunities because of the fact that, and I'm not even trying to be facetious, but like, because, you know, they made a lot of money off us, it did turn into tons and tons and tons of like front of the line. This is the band that we're pushing for all these opportunities. So we benefited from it immensely as well. We really did.
Mm-hmm. As I said, when you've got people behind you, it makes, you know, a huge difference, but making sure you've got the people that mean the most to you, that you can trust in your circle. And every artist will tell you that it's so important that you have a pulse on your own music and what you are releasing out there and your own image, right?
You're totally right, 100%. And that's what, thankfully, we're doing this time around.
Yes, and I am so happy for you guys because you guys have worked so hard to get where you are today, but you're all so talented. And we're just all so grateful, you know, for your crafts and everything that you guys are doing, producing music out there today. So thank you guys so much for that.
Well, thank you so, so much for saying so. It really means a lot to hear it from someone outside of ourselves that, you know, we're definitely not shy of telling ourselves how good we are, but that only goes so far if no one else thinks that.
Well, you know what? Note to self, you guys are amazing.
Thank you so much. I'll take it.
Now, one last question, just a fun question. What is your most useless talent?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I am the absolute authority on sports uniforms, which ones are good, which ones are bad.
Oh, okay. Which ones are good?
Okay, so there's, like, the classics in terms of, like, let's say Chicago Blackhawks, and I have to hand it to the Maple Leafs or the Canadiens.
Anything like that. For that.
They're very clean, very nice. But then you have something like the Calgary Flames, which looks like a Monster Energy drink and an old, like, Fox Racing, like, motocross jersey had a baby, which is just a terrible look. You know, I think classic with a slight modern touch can be okay, but I would say generally we've been blowing it any time since the mid-2000s where any sports team tries to have, like, a quote-unquote, like, modern look. It's always brutal.
So what's your favorite look to date?
Ooh, great question. In, like, all of sports, mm-hmm. and you know what's funny is I'm actually, like, a Cincinnati Bengals fan, so this is probably, treason, but I think the Cleveland Browns have the cleanest sports universe. Now that they're back to their classic look, I think that is, a sport, especially, like, a sport like football, where it's not, like, a flashy color, it's brown. Mm-hmm. I think that is as good as a uniform can look. Or, like, the Oakland Raiders, something like that. It's terrific.
Okay, very cool.
I like the Oilers jersey that somebody made up with stereos on it.
Oh, my goodness. So, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. When we did the anthem, we got a, like, wink and a nod that it was approved. Because, of course, that's, like, ridiculous copyright infringement, but
a little bit.
But again, we did it, like, all the punk bands we followed, they would make merch, like, based on, like, classic logos all the time, and I don't think they were big enough for people to know. So when we did that, they, like, mentioned it to us. And then now, to bring it full circle, we have a single that'll come out over the summer called Glory Days. Mm-hmm. And it's very much about our past, and I think the single art is going to be photos of us as kids. And we actually had to go through the Oilers and the NHL, and we got approval to one of us, I think it might even be mine, it was me or Rob, our kid photo, we're wearing an Oilers logo, and they've given us permission to use it on single art.
Cool. Oh, nice. That's awesome. Nice. That's awesome. Good show. That's amazing.
You know, Pat, I think the Oilers could use Jesus in goal, and you're supposed, you need to ask me why.
Well, okay, because he saves.
Yeah, because Jesus saves.
You know what's so funny? Is my dad bought me a soccer shirt that had, like, Jesus saving a soccer ball when I was a kid 6 years ago. And it was, like, so cheesy. I'm like, well, I'm obviously not wearing this at school, but thanks, Dad.
I'm so happy about that answer. I am so happy. Somebody else is feeling my pain. Okay.
I got my sense of humor somewhere. So my dad, yeah, he very much imparted his... you know, for better or for worse, depends who you ask.
Yeah.
Okay, one more. I have one more question. Just one more for me. Why was there a delay in the Leper hockey game?
Oh, my goodness. This one I'm stumped. I don't know.
Because there was a face-off in the corner.
Oh, will you go away? See, I can't mute him. God, help me.
I like that, though.
Don't encourage him anywhere, Pat. Okay.
It's good because it's, like, somewhat, like, innocent fun, but at the same time you're implying, like, a devastating bodily injury. So it's got layers.
I like this guy.
I know. I figured you would.
Back at you.
I figured you would. All right. So we're going to remind everybody, Look Good is out today. So you can download, add it to your playlist. purchase it and share it. And if you haven't heard it on your local radio station, go ahead and call them and request it. It's going to go a long way. So a great song that's out right now, Look Good. So tell everybody where they can find your latest music and news, because I know you guys are going to be coming out with some more very shortly.
Yeah, so the music's always going to be updated in real time to our Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, all the like regular places you would probably listen to music as is. And I think we've been really sitting on a lot of like revamping to the social media, because we've had ideas, but we didn't want to just do it until we had a release. So I think right now, starting right now, all the social media accounts are at We Are Stereos, and they're going to be really up to date and have a lot of information coming out. And then wearestereos.net is the website. And we're going to definitely make sure that we're keeping this all current, up to date. And there shouldn't be a lot of questions about, you know, what's going on with us, because I plan on annoying everyone with updates.
Are you guys tying in the fans when it comes to any of your video stuff or anything like that?
Yeah, so we had an idea. Well, again, just to go back to Look Good, like to me, it's such a universal song that I think speaks to, it has to have this like super inclusive element to it. And so we really wanted to get that across in the video, but unfortunately I just don't see that happening with like even eased COVID restrictions in the time frame we need. But to answer your question, the idea we had, I think, would work for a lot of stuff that we've wanted to do. And so, yeah, I mean, like even our video for Turn It Up was very much an open call just to fans. And so we loved that. Like, it was just like, that would be, I think, ideal once we're able to do that, for sure.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope, because I know the fans will be looking forward to that one. So thank you once again. I hope you'll come back when you have your release later on this summer. We're looking forward to it. Anything to do with Stereos, we are there, especially moi.
That means so, so much. Thank you again for doing this. And absolutely, I will do this anytime you want to.
Oh, not a problem. Thank you so much. Say hi to the guys for us. And
I absolutely will.
Good luck with this one. I know everybody's going to love it. So absolutely aces on this one.
Thanks a lot, Pat.
Okay, well, thank you, guys. Thank you very much. Thank you both.
You take care, and we look forward to having you back.
Absolutely. You take care, too. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, Pat. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Music's Journey Podcast. I'm your host, Kim Sear, and again, thank you to my very special guest, Pat Quarterback from Stereos, who are out today with their brand new single, Look Good. So again, download it, purchase it, and share it in all your playlists, and request it at your local radio stations, and they'll play it for you. So it goes a long way, and we're really excited about their brand new single for Stereos today. They'll be coming back with some more music coming later this summer, so we're looking forward to it. If you enjoy today's show, please consider leaving us a rating and a review. The more positive the rating, the easier it is to find the show, and really helps the growth of the community that we are developing right now. So we really appreciate it, each and every one of you. If you are someone who has recently found our podcast, welcome, and we're really excited to have you here. So please make sure that you subscribe and stay tuned to our future podcasts, which will include the duo Monroe and Patrick, Elise Saunders, Jason Blaine is back, Danny Doucette, Jess, Annika, and more. So we're really looking forward to having you guys tune back into our future episodes. To everybody listening, take a screenshot and post this to your Instagram story and tag Music's Journey Podcast or our sponsors, Now and Then Magazine. We really appreciate it. I will feature you on the account and message you as well. So thank you so much for anything that you guys could do to help with our interviews and letting us know how much you enjoy them. So once again, thank you for tuning in to Music's Journey. Stay safe out there, and we look forward to having you back and tuning in through your home, whether or not it's through your car or a place at work. So once again, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate each and every one of you. I am Kim Sear, your host here at Music's Journey.
Once again, a great big thank you to Pat Quarterback from Stereos for chatting with us today on Music's Journey. The Music's Journey podcast is brought to you by NowAndThenMagazine.com. You can listen to all our podcasts on Google Podcast, Amazon Music, Spotify, Player FM, Deezer, TuneIn, Alexa, Podcast Addicts, Podchaser, and more. Our theme song is titled I Can Tell by the band Emergence. I'm John Marshall. On behalf of our host, Kim Sear, thank you for listening to Music's Journey.